Welcome to Canine Hijinks, the podcast where crazy agility people talk dogs, the dog sport lifestyle, and the sport of dog agility. Join me, Alyssa Looney.
And me, Whitney Taylor, as we explore the sport of dog agility, reflect on our learning, and have a lot of fun along the way.
Welcome back to Canine Hijinks. We are excited to have our first guest of the year with us today. I'd like to introduce you all to Peyton Green, who is the current agility instructor at Corral Creek Dog Sports Center and probably one of the most analytical agility minds that I know.
Yep.
Peyton, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. Nice to be here.
So we invited Peyton onto the podcast today to talk a little bit about commitment and distance handling. Both of those have been requested, and she's really good at teaching commitment skills, which I think also ties into distance handling. But before we get into that topic, Peyton, can you tell us a little more about yourself, your history with agility, and what dogs you currently live with, train with, compete with?
Yeah, I got started in agility over a decade ago. I don't remember exactly when, just playing around with my pet dogs growing up as a kid. We weren't particularly talented. They had their little behavioral issues. So I learned a lot about training from having to work through like a reactive dog. Never got to trial with those dogs, but learned a lot of strong training concepts. And then I, 5 years ago, got a border collie, and now I have two border collies, a Malinois and a Moody puppy. And we compete in international agility, go to world team trials, that type of stuff.
Peyton has big goals. That's what she's trying to say. She
yes.
very, very much intends, much like myself and Alyssa, to make a team. That's the big thing. And so all of her training and trialing is in service of that goal.
Yes, for sure. Yeah. I would go as far as to say my goal isn't to make a team. My goal is to podium at big events.
Well, there you go. You're one step above me. I just want to go.
which I think puts me in a different mindset for my training.
Yeah, because
I'm trying to train for perfection in lines, not just getting through it.
Yeah. Well, that's why you're here to talk to us today.
Yeah.
You did achieve. I mean, I'm not there yet, but.
Well, but this past fall at European Open Team Tryouts, you ended up on a podium with both Vivid and Dash.
Yep.
Yes. And I see those runs and I see the wide turns where we lost quite a bit of time. That's what I see.
Of course you do.
Meanwhile, I show it and I'm like, this is Peyton and she's my instructor and she's amazing.
All about perspective.
Yes. Right.
I like that. And it's actually, that's a good follow-up from our most recent episode about goal setting.
Yeah.
So commitment. I want to talk about this topic because when I started training with Peyton, I had Ole and she was just barely two, I think, when we started training with you full time, and she couldn't commit to anything. Ole had a big habit of, I'd try to send her to something and she would look at it and then she would look at me and she would just bark at me. Since that time, for the most part, she doesn't do that anymore. I can send her to places I never really even imagined. We still are continuing to try to expand that distance, the commitment level that she has, but it's improved so much. So I really wanted to talk to you about sort of your philosophy on how do we get dogs to engage with the obstacle and commit to them no matter what the person is doing.
Yeah, I think people don't realize all the variables that go into committing to an obstacle. So they think their dog can wrap a wing and therefore they should be able to wrap while they run the other direction. Very different in the dog's mind. Commitment against opposing handler motion is not natural. I mean, this whole sport, we're teaching them to follow our emotion, follow our physical body. And so wanting them to finish doing their job while we go the other way is not natural. And so we need to do this fairly methodically. I also think it gets lumped in very frequently with sending. So the idea of I'm going to send my dog 20 feet away is not the same thing as me leaving while they go to the obstacle 20 feet away. So people try to lump all that together, and really we should be exposing them to the idea of counter motion very slowly and slowly making it harder and harder and harder instead of just assuming they know how to do it and running the opposite direction. There's lots that goes into that. We can do it first on our reinforcers and then take it to our obstacles. Often the easiest place to do this starting is a tunnel. I like to teach the concept first on a wing wrap or a cone wrap. So they learn the idea of commitment before I ever even start to sequence.
And I want to clarify, when you talk about cone wraps and wing wraps, you're not talking about sending to the wing and having them wrap it multiple times.
Correct. I am not a fan of that. I know it's commonly done by some people, and I think theoretically, if you're a perfect trainer, you could do it. I see a lot of frustration with almost every single dog I see do that. I just mean they go around the wing and they come straight back, which is what they're going to do in agility. Like, we're not actually asking them to do it twice. I don't need that skill. There's no reason for me to train it.
My understanding was that folks asked for that, like, if you don't wrap tight enough the first time, you have to do it again. So to get the reward of going on, you have to wing wrap to criteria. I don't know how the dog's supposed to understand that personally. I've also never really liked that. But I think, isn't that the idea more than just having the finger quote skill?
Yeah, I think most people do it as a way to make tight turns. I don't think it actually helps with tight turns if your dog, like, there's a lot that goes into tight turns. I don't really think it does.
And because, I'm sorry, like, and if you're asking them to do it again, you're probably standing still, and you probably weren't standing still the first time, right? So you're not actually presenting the same picture twice in a row. So, yeah, okay.
The big benefit I see to it is being, like, you could train it to be a way to show control and listening to verbals, again, opposing handler motion. So you could ask for them to wrap while you continue running away and ask them to continue to wrap. I have other ways I'd rather ask my dog to show me control than that. It's just not worth my time. I don't know. That's kind of a tangent.
Sorry.
When you're teaching your sort of foundation for commitment, like, how much distance is it? Two cones? Is it three cones? Is it four cones? And how much distance are you putting between those things before you're ever moving it to some other obstacle?
Partially, it's going to be dog dependent. If they're really struggling and on one step of this, sometimes you can skip a step and go around and see what's more natural for them. I prefer to do this on wings, but if they're really struggling, I'll go to a tunnel. But with my own dogs, I always start this on just their toys.
Yeah.
So sending to their toys and starting to leave before they get to the toy. So I might have my dog in a down and I'm standing by my toy 20 feet away, and I give them their get it marker that gives them permission to go get the toy, and I run the other direction, going the opposite direction they are. And I want them to be able to commit to that toy, grab it, and then chase after me. The same concept as doing the obstacle when I'm going the other direction. It is a little bit easier because they really want that toy, assuming I've put in the foundations that they really want that toy. Some dogs are going to be so toy obsessed that this is no big deal. So it's just a good way to get them practicing getting used to that motion. Whereas my younger border collie, we did a lot of this. This was really, really hard for him. And it's not perfect. He really struggles to commit to that toy when I'm running the other direction. And so we're already working through that concept of commitment before I ever even had him do a cone wrap.
I've always heard these referred to as reverse retrieves. Is that a good name for them?
I think I've heard that term.
Because I always do it where, like,
that's what I've heard them called too.
Yeah. So I put the dog in a sit stay and I back some distance away from them. Usually I drop the toy, say, get it. And that you start with the dog very, very close to you so that they're only taking one step toward you, but that you're moving so that you're crossing paths with them. And then you move further and further from the dog. And of course, you have to have a sit stay in order to do that. So again, if you're thinking about the foundation for the foundation, you're talking about a sit stay and a strong toy drive in order to even start.
Yeah.
Start the skill before the commitment skill.
And a good marker word to give them that permission to get the word or get the toy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Good point.
There are a handful of foundations here. This isn't necessarily something you can do the first day your dog comes home.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. It's been really fun lately because when Ale was a puppy, I was really good about filming everything I did. And I made like a highlight video almost every week of her puppyhood. And which, by the way, I did so much more foundation work with her than I ever did with Leo. Poor Leo. I look back at it now. I'm like, oh, that was good. That was good. I did the work mostly. But I did that to her toys a lot. And after she's sending to them really well, it wasn't just about like running back on the same path. Sometimes I'm set her up in more of a triangle or different sort of shapes to the toy, right? So that she was learning to drive towards that thing if that's the cue that I gave her, kind of from any angle, no matter where her and I were. So there was a lot of work we did with toys before we ever got to any obstacles.
I've never done it with the multiple angles before. Yeah. I always just do it as a straight. I can see the benefit of that.
Yeah, because multiple if you think angles. About getting to a jump, like,
right,
you're not always going to be on the same path as your dog.
Right, you're going to send and then jump. Go the other way.
Or you're going to be kind of converging or, you know, right. There's all kinds of positions your dog might be in relative to you.
Yeah.
Multiple angles, but you can also do this. You could start the idea of sending and commitment, combining the two. So say you have that toy 20 feet away from your dog. You could stand like halfway in between the toy and your dog. Mm-hmm. Send to the toy and start to leave. And so then it looks really, really similar mm-hmm. to sending to a cone and leaving.
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
So tons of work that could be done. And the nice thing with that work is it can be done with fairly young puppies and it's not real hard on their bodies.
Yeah.
I mean, cautionary tale, you don't want them like running full blast and then stopping to pick up the toy and then turning a whole bunch when they're really tiny. But you're not jumping. They're not, you know, things like that. And I do think it can be important to think about the size of your toy and like how far down they have to go to grab it. Some of that kind of thing too, just safety caution there. So now you got them on toys. They can do it all. What's next?
Next, I go to a cone or a wing. I am teaching that wrap. I really like to actually introduce this while I'm shaping the concept. So I shape my cone wrap. And I start to introduce a little bit of variation in my motion before I even add a verbal to it. So they start the motion to go around and I'm going to take one step away. I'm not going to be sprinting away or anything at this point, but introducing the idea that while you're shaping and they're offering that decision to go wrap 3 feet away from me, I'm going to already start just taking a step away just to get them used to you're going to do this job while I might move a different direction.
And that's before then, you ever named it.
Yep. Then as I'm naming it is when I really start to introduce more and more motion. Once I'm naming it, especially, there's going to be more speed. And this is where handling, I think, is often neglected. Handling is a huge part of commitment. A lot of times when I see dogs refusing frequently, it's because the handlers weren't actually showing them where they were going. So they tried to leave and they were in such a rush to leave that they didn't actually point their dog to the obstacle.
She's talking about me.
Yes. And like three students yesterday. This is constant. Like as we start to work on commitment and I tell you to leave earlier for your dog's skill, at this point, it's not even about getting ahead. It's just for building your dog's skill. And you're focusing on trying to get out of there, most people stop focusing on their handling. So it's still really important that we are showing them where they're going. For me, I'm really big on making sure your feet are pointed where they need to go. It makes a huge difference. So I'm taking a really clear step to cue where they're going before I leave. It's not like a little, like, five little steps in a circle. It's one clear step forward where they need to go. And then I'm pivoting and leaving. And I'm starting being really, really careful about my handling as soon as I start adding in that verbal. And then I will do this on just one cone starting to leave earlier and earlier and earlier. I like to often start this with a treat toss beforehand, but you can do a stay also. I think like tossing a piece of food behind you, letting them eat it, and then letting them reorient back to that cone, they're just going to have a tiny bit more momentum than if you start them in a stay.
And you don't break your start line.
Yes.
That's me again. That's me.
Yes.
Breaking my start line.
And like, again, like probably 5 students last night. everyone is always breaking their start line on these foundation behaviors. Yeah. So starting with those treat tosses just helps you avoid that. Mm-hmm. And I do think it has a lot of other benefits. But at this point, I'm starting to really introduce, I'm sending, I don't know, 5-10 feet, and I'm leaving as soon as they pass me. Pretty quickly then, I start going to multiple cones. At first, this is just two cones, and I'm sending back and forth to them. This momentum of doing multiple in a row often really helps commitment. Mm-hmm. So I'm able to start leaving earlier and earlier because they have the commitment. And so how I'm doing this almost always, it's two cones, starting them pretty close. I'm front crossing after each one. So I'm switching sides each time, and then spreading out the cones. And I'm working really two things in this drill. I'm working sending them further distances and testing that commitment, training that commitment. So I'm really intentional in if I'm trying to push their commitment, if I'm trying to leave earlier, I'm not going to be sending further. So I'm working one thing at a time. I might be sending 10 feet. But the first time I do it, I might leave 1 foot before they wrap the cone. The second time, I might leave 2 feet before they wrap the cone. The third time, 3 feet before they wrap the cone. But every time I'm only sending that 10 feet, that exact same distance.
Right.
Same idea to stay. Like, we want to increase the challenge of one variable at a time. You're not increasing distance, duration, and distraction all at the same time.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. I am trying to be really careful that I'm only increasing the distance I'm sending or my commitment at a time. And all of this, especially once we add speed to multiple cone wraps, that handling falls apart even more. So I'm still being really, really careful that I'm sending with my, like I'm taking that final step to send them and then I'm pivoting and turning around. This is a really good place for handlers to work on their footwork for sending too.
Yeah, because I've heard feedback given about like the number of steps taken to turn around versus like, it has to do with where you do and don't transfer your weight. So if you step forward and put your weight there, you want to be able to step back with your other leg and just turn and not take like 4 steps to turn around, right? So to have that sort of cleanliness in your handling. And it's a good place to practice it too, because you're not really trying to get anywhere. Like the other cone is right there. So it's a good way to practice those mechanics. I also like to use the tunnel to practice handling mechanics because the dog can't see you fumbling around while they're in the tunnel.
Most of the time when I hear people talk about these like front cross mechanics, it's mostly about handler's efficiency. So we don't want to be taking 12 steps because you're going to be slower. Mm-hmm. And I absolutely agree with that. But I think it makes a huge difference for dog skill. If you practice having clean footwork sending them. I mean, it helps so much with dogs refusing. It is like, I give the feedback every single day that they need a more clear step when they're someone's doing a send.
So I've been on the injured list recently. And so I've been making Peyton run my dogs. You can tell like all day, it took her a little while to figure out like the differences between the two of us. And once she got a little more used to you, she's quit dropping bars as often and some of that kind of stuff. But Leo is really just learning sequencing. And so as I've been on this injured list, Peyton's like, well, what do you want me to work on with Leo? And I'm like, all the sequencing, teach him all the sequencing the right way before I ever get him back. And sure enough, he's learning it quite well.
I think a lot of that was just timing and that he was starting to figure out the game.
I don't know. Give yourself some credit. Like I actually was rewatching some of the videos since I've been trying to video it and watch, and you know, it's, since I can't run my own dogs, it's like how I can get some joy in the sequencing since I can't do it right now. But it is so interesting. Like there's been a couple of times where you've taken that really clear step, but I think I tend to take several steps at the same position. And so there were a couple of times where the first time she might refuse it because she's like, well, you stopped entirely. But then she figured out, oh yeah, that step means to keep going. And I think that I tend to do multiple steps, which is much less efficient for me, but also less clear for her. So she's been kind of figuring those things out while you've been running her.
I think it's an ingrained habit for you because she wasn't sending so well that you're just trying to get as close as you can.
Yes. Yeah.
Versus,
please go. Please go.
Yeah.
Versus, I train so much send in my dogs that I don't worry about that. Like they're gonna go. If I point them the right place, they're probably gonna go too far, more likely than they're not gonna go far enough.
Yes. That's not always a problem most of the time. Yeah. Although we've had a few moments of like, oh, bye. Because she's sending, and I'm like, wow, I don't know what to do with that anymore.
There's one other little thing with this footwork. It's not only that really clear send, but that timing of that step. Mm-hmm. They need to see this step, so it really needs to be done like while they're behind you or in line with you.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so a lot of people are still just trying to run to get as close as possible, and then not giving that dog their information of that clear step.
The great part about that is that means you don't have to run as far. Like, right. So
for sure.
And this is where this ties into distance handling so much, because I wouldn't say that you call yourself a big distance handler, right? But your dogs can send like nobody's business. And it's because their commitment is so good. It's like, it ends up becoming distance skills, but it's because they can commit so well.
It's the gateway to distance skills.
Yeah. It's not because you went out with this goal in mind to be like, I'm going to be a distance handler, but it's because you've taught them such good foundations for commitment that you can now send them from a heck of a long ways away and they'll go do the thing.
Yeah. Like Dash, my older border collie, has very good verbals. Like I could truly handle her standing in the middle of the ring. Vivid, my Malinois, does not have nearly as good verbals. It just hasn't been a priority at this point. I can still handle most of these things at a lot of distance just because she has that good commitment. She understands my sending. I can still communicate with her if I need to be 50 feet behind. Like it's not an issue.
You led nicely into my next question, which is like, that's great. You can send. What about when there's three things out there? So how much of being sort of successful with the sending is about training good verbals?
Like a big discovery for me this last year has been what I have thought was verbals and what most American instructors have taught me was verbals is a lot more handling. Like, you know, the classic, the tunnel with the backside right on the middle of the tunnel that tunnel is a huge off course trap. I have no problem with that with Vivid anymore. I can handle that just fine with her. She does not know her backside verbal, but we can do it through handling. So opening my shoulder, showing a little decel, different ways to communicate that. Like I have no problem keeping her on course, even 30, 40 feet behind. If I stood still and just asked her for one verbal or the other, she couldn't do it.
Yeah. That's sort of where Sprite's at. It's really all still handling.
Well, it's kind of all about setting them on the right line, right? Which if you have that really clear step where you're setting them on the right line.
Yeah.
That's a lot of what makes the difference.
Yeah. That like backside versus tunnel discrimination. That's so common right now. The dog's line is so similar. Like the line to the backside is the same line as the entry to the tunnel. Mm-hmm. But even so, you can still show them what they need to do, opening your shoulder to pull them in a little bit, decelling a bit to show them they're not just running full speed mm-hmm. into that tunnel. Little things like that can make a huge difference. And verbals are wonderful. I would eventually like to train her to have as nice verbals as Dash. There's more important things for us to be training right now. It isn't, I don't think it's going to be anything that's going to be make or break anytime soon for us. It is extremely rare for me to leave a run and think, wow, I needed a better verbal.
Yeah.
Not to say we don't have mistakes, but it's rare that now that I've learned how to handle these things more, that I blame a lack of training the verbal.
Well, and I think, and I've seen this as my education has improved, and I think a lot of what you end up teaching me, Peyton, is to look at things so analytically and looking at handling versus the verbal. Like, you very rarely tell me actually to get my verbal out sooner. It's more you telling me where were your toes pointed or whatever. But I think one of the mm-hmm. problems with verbals is that we as people really think we should be able to rely on them more than we actually can. And I think it is extremely rare that we teach the dogs their verbals well enough
right.
that it will override mm-hmm. our physical position. And then you see people having mistakes on course and they're like, oh, well, they blame the verbal. Like, I gave them their verbal. Why didn't mm-hmm. they take it?
Mm-hmm.
But they're ignoring the fact that their body was in the complete wrong direction.
Right.
So they forgot yep. the handling, which tells you the dog isn't actually acknowledging that verbal. It's not overriding the physical motion.
No.
For sure. To train true independent verbals that like oppose handler motion is a lot of work and really challenging. It is absolutely possible, but to have every single one of my verbals perfectly understood, even if I'm being an awful handler, is just way too much work to be worth it right now for me. There are a handful. I work really hard on my weave verbal and my tunnel verbal. So there are often going to be discriminations that I'm not going to be able to help them there. I still help them as much as I can with my body, but it does. Those two I find are the ones that I want the most.
Yeah.
And to be clear, I leave runs all the time and people say, oh, wow, Vivid has such good verbals. You just, it looks like it because she's doing all the things, but I'm doing a lot to help her.
Right.
So let's talk a little bit about troubleshooting commitment, because how many people are just like me and they get their dog to a couple years old and they're training and trialing and then their dog's refusing all kinds of stuff. Like, what do you take them back to? How do you troubleshoot that?
One really important thing I don't think I've mentioned yet. A lot of people, when their dog refuses something, they just ask them to do it again.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they don't stop the sequence. Their dog refuses to jump. And then they're like, no, go jump, go jump, go jump. And they just keep encouraging it. That is not
talking about me again. That's me.
And plenty of other people. I don't want my behavior to be refuse the jump, look at me, and then I encourage you four more times and you go take the jump. So I'm going to break it down to whatever point they need to be successful. This is going to be different per dog. Maybe if you didn't start to leave as early, maybe you left 5 feet before they took the jump. Maybe this time, if you leave 2 feet before they take the jump, you'll be fine. Or you might have to go to not leaving at all. Make it easier for them. Either ask for less of a distance of ascend or less commitment. So less opposing handler motion, depending on which your dog is struggling with. Make it easier from the beginning. So from wherever you were starting before, if it was tunnel jump, start at the tunnel again. Make it easier. Have you further ahead. Don't leave as early, whatever they need. And then slowly make it harder. So it's like not enough if I have to stand right beside the jump and stand still. I then want to make it harder. So then I'm going to be 1 foot away the next time. And then the next time I might be 1 foot away from the jump and leave when they're a foot away from taking the jump. And so I'm slowly adding in the sequence, in momentum, adding in my testing of that commitment.
And so what do you do to reset so now your dog has taken the tunnel and you head towards the jump and they stop and bark at you instead of taking the jump? What do you do?
I'm partially going to be dog dependent. I need them in a good mental state. So I might ask them for some other, like, walk away from it, ask them for some basic behavior that I can reward. Some dogs I will just, like, do a food scatter. Often, for many dogs at least, that refusal comes with a lot of frustration. So you're going to get a lot of barky, frantic behavior. I don't want to start the sequence in that barking, frantic behavior. So I want to do something to get them back into a functional mental state, whatever that is for your dog. Then once they're thinking again nicely, then I'm starting the sequence again. And I'm making it easier so they can be successful that next time.
And I know with Ollie, like, you took me back to the cone drill, or, you know, we used Winx or whatever. And you're like,
yep,
she doesn't understand this concept. So we went back to that. And honestly, it went. And that's one of the nice things about that foundation, because it wasn't like I hadn't ever done any of that. Right. She did a ton of that when she was a puppy, but we didn't really revisit it. And she sort of needed that reminder. And I think I needed the reminder on my mechanics and things like that. So we went back to the drill, at that drill, and, like, man, her commitment just skyrocketed. It really didn't take very long to improve it significantly.
Yeah, I think it's a wonderful drill to force handlers to think about their mechanics, especially. And you can expand this drill. So if I found my dog struggled one weekend with commitment at a certain angle, I'll do the exact same drill with, like, a figure eight and put it at a certain angle so that I'm working that specific angle. You can do this with, like, three or four cones and ping pong from one to the other. So you're varying the angle a little bit at a time. You can put a tunnel in between the two cones. So then you're working tunnel commitment and sending and driving out of tunnels. Lots of ways you can switch up the same foundational drill to work on whatever struggle you're seeing with your dog.
Ooh, I'm glad you brought that up. One of the pieces that I struggle with still with Ollie is, like, her commitment out of tunnels, because she tends to want to curl into me. So one of the things I think I've also been learning through you, and, like, the way that Kirsten O'Neill teaches her dog walk and some of that kind of stuff, is that if we do too much work where we're sending them to the obstacle and then immediately rewarding, they're not learning to drive out of the obstacle, which then affects their commitment to the next thing.
Absolutely.
Right. Then they go sort of like obstacle focus, handler focus, obstacle focus, handler focus, instead of having a good balance between the two, right? That I should always be looking for the next obstacle and paying attention to the handler, because you need them doing both things.
Yes, for sure. And it is a balance. I tend to do a lot on the sending and the commitment side. I think it's just who I am. And so then I tend to have to reel it back and work on that handler focus out of tunnels. But I do a lot in my foundations of, I want their default to be run straight out of that tunnel.
Yep.
And so I'm doing this figure eight with a wing on each side of that tunnel. And I want to see their default coming out of that tunnel is running straight ahead. At first, I'm going to get a head check before they do that. But the more we do this and the more I support them and set them up for success here, the more they're going to start to expect heading straight out of that tunnel. It is a lot easier as a handler for me to cue collection if I'm behind than to cue going straight out of that tunnel when I'm behind. I need their default to be run straight.
Yeah. And I did see that pendulum, right? It's all on a pendulum when we started to get Ollie really committing to things. And then all of a sudden it was like, I didn't exist. And so right now we're having to do a little more of, like, no, you still have to pay attention to me also. And I imagine if we crank too hard on that, then, you know, you'd have to kind of push it back the other way. So, and a lot of that depends on the types of courses that you're running. I mean, there's a lot of the big international stuff is just driving ahead. So much of it is driving ahead. But I think we're now starting to see the course design switch a little bit too, to where now you need a little more handler focus, because there's been this big focus on just run the big lines. So
for sure. And at least for most judges, there are still a lot of sending stuff. So I am working a lot on making sure my dogs can get into that handler focus and allow me to manipulate their line. But we still need a lot of those sending skills for these courses. I mean, the one Dash Podium Dawn at EO tryouts was a very technical course. It was super challenging. It had a very low success rate. But I still was sending, I don't know, 40 something feet. I did quite a lot of layering in that course. I had used quite a lot of distance to be able to make the crosses that I needed to make.
Yeah, that course was tough. I think that was the course that, as I was White Dog, and so I had to run it first. And I was really proud of some pieces in that course that we managed. But I walked that course, I don't know, like 12 different times, and still didn't know how I was going to handle it when I went out there, because it was probably the most intimidating, gigantic, combined with technical course I had ever attempted in my entire life. And I was so intimidated by it. Like, it was hard.
That's the type of course I love. I love when it's like almost too challenging. Like, it's the point of people are going to start questioning if like the sport has gotten too hard, blah, 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 blah. That is so fun for me.
But the thing is that when you do it well, like Dash did, like it wasn't too hard. Like, it wasn't too hard for the dog. She understood her job and where to go and had such nice execution on that course, even though it was really freaking hard. But if you didn't have the type of commitment skills that you had, you couldn't run fast enough. I mean, I certainly couldn't, but no way. Almost nobody could. Maybe the people with crazy man legs.
The crazy man legs wouldn't have layered that tunnel for sure. No.
But, you know, for the rest of us without crazy man legs, you had to have the commitment to get through that.
Yeah.
I mean, the dog's lines were perfectly fluid. Like, there wasn't anything I didn't like about the dog's lines. But it required a lot of skill for me to be able to get them around.
Well, and I think it's so funny when you're trying to get a dog to commit that it's that first time that they sort of like blow you off and go do something that's a total off course. And you're like, party, you sended, you committed, you went, yay. And then you're like, okay, so we rewarded still having the forward focus. Like, now how do I handle it so that I actually get what I want, right? I always think that there's that funny moment when you're like, oh, you're doing it. That's not where I want it, but yay.
It's definitely been one of my biggest developments as a trainer in like the last year or so, that I need to work on the collection and everything involving control along with the sense. While we're sending, we still need to be able to do a tight turn. Even if we're running straight out of that tunnel, you should be able to turn tight on that next jump.
Right.
It is a really fine balance, and that takes a lot of skill.
Yeah, that is definitely, I have pretty decent mechanics in a lot of places, but I struggle when it is go, 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 and then decel and hit the brakes to get the collection. I just tend to overrun. I don't start slowing down soon enough. It's not that I don't think my dog can send. I'm just trying to get to the place to make sure that I'm there to support in the way that I need to support. And I end up taking three more steps before I stop. And then, of course, I'm behind and then I'm rushing and you've got a drop bar and you get a big old wide turn because, you know, when they were passing you, you weren't decelled. So that's where I struggle. It's not that I don't mentally understand what it should look like. It's just that I'm like, I have to get up there. And then I'm going so fast. I'm like, oh, that was three more steps than I had intended to take there. And so there's also sort of that version of the struggle too. When you mean to send, you're trying to, you know, give a lot of motion and get where you need to go. And then you just
for sure
overrun your dog. I did that to Fractal all the time because he needed less support than what I was used to having to give because Dexter had no send. And it took forever to figure that out. So I'm better with Sprite, but I can think of a place when we were at the Red Poppy Cup that like I knew what I needed to do. I knew I needed to decel or I was going to get the off course jump and I just couldn't do it. Gosh darn it. And of course she went out and took it. Good girl. Like I did not set the correct line. So there's struggles on many fronts when it comes to doing all of these things well.
And this is where I mentioned good shoes, because one of the last times, one of the last times I run Ollie, I was teaching. I wasn't thinking about running, and so I was wearing boots. And I took off the boots and ran in socks because I couldn't run in the boots. And I like fully fell while sending to a backside because it was a huge run. And then I needed to decel really quick.
Yeah.
And it is so ingrained in me to take those right steps. And my body did not slow down enough.
Yeah. Used to the traction. You got shoes after that. It worked out much better.
Yep.
Please hold. Must get shoes.
Yeah. And also, you can't hurt yourself because then my dogs wouldn't get to run anything.
Yeah, then I'd have too many dogs to run.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there anything else you feel like people should know about commitment to kind of wrap this up?
I think it would be, let me start over that again. I think that's the majority of it, but it would be a really good idea for most people to go out there and video themselves while they're doing this. It is really easy to blame the dog and not see our own mechanics that went wrong. So mm-hmm. for your toe to be pointed just barely the wrong direction, or your motion to send them was a little too late, it being very careful that those mechanics are right and videoing, reviewing to make sure they're right is a really good idea. Additionally, the video can be really good to make sure you're not pushing those variables too soon. So you might have left 2 feet before they took the wrap one time, and then the next time you might have tried to leave like 10 feet before they took the wrap. That is probably mm-hmm. too big of a jump. Sometimes it can be helpful if you have like some type of visuals.
That's what I was just gonna say. So I use cones for myself because yep. I'm terrible.
I love our turf at Corral Creek is recycled turf. So there's like seams in the turf and there's like little lines on the turf and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I can always tell students, like, when your dog passes the blue line, that's when you need to start leading.
Mm-hmm.
Finding little things like that to watch that you're not pushing the difficulty too soon.
Yep.
It'll just help you be successful.
Yeah, I've done that with little cones too.
Yeah, think specifically about what's the one thing I'm changing, because that's the other thing that I am very yep. guilty of, is that like, it's not only did mm-hmm. I increase the distance, I'm also leaving sooner. So just say it in your head. Yep. Okay, what's the one thing that I'm going to change? We're going to increase the distance. The dog and I are starting together and we're going to send and move back together. That's the one thing we're changing, is the distance away from the obstacle, not I'm sending and then I'm also going to leave, right? And maybe you're not leaving it at that stage in the game. So yep. changing only one thing.
Yep.
I also am really guilty of not actually changing what I'm doing. So like Peyton will say, okay, now yep. send from here. Okay, now send from here. And now send from here. And then I'll do it. And I'm like, I didn't move, did I? I didn't leave any earlier. Oops.
That's actually a good point I haven't made. I very frequently am telling people, you don't build commitment unless you test commitment, unless you work on making that commitment stronger and stronger. So a lot of people's default is to sit there and stare at the obstacle until they take it, mm-hmm. Which is probably going to help you be successful for that one rep, but it's not yes. going to build your skill.
Yeah.
So I am constantly testing commitment. I am sending from further away and leaving earlier in every single sequence I do with my very experienced dogs. I am still constantly trying to make it stronger and stronger and stronger. I don't want to plateau. I don't want them to think you can leave 10 feet away, but no more than that. So I'm right. constantly mm-hmm. trying to leave earlier and earlier, send further and further.
Well, another thing I think that to be cautious of is just because you can get it in practice doesn't necessarily mean you can get it in a trial. So one For of sure. the things that I've been trying to work on with Ollie is being able to ditch her in the weaves and have her still finish them. And largely I can do on almost whatever I want in practice to ditch her in the weaves, but it hasn't always translated to trials. And so one of the thing that I tried to do when I was on my quest for EO tryout cues is if a lot of the AKC courses didn't necessarily translate to international style courses. They're just so much different. The spacing is smaller, stuff like that. But if we had already eed or messed up to where I wasn't going to get the cue, I would try to find pieces like that. Like, oh, well, we can't cue, so I may as well test that skill here in a trial. Right. And I actually got quite a few opportunities where I could test ditching her in the weaves while we were in a competition. And so I try to look for some of those opportunities to test it when, if it doesn't work out, I can resend her and help her understand this still applies in this scenario. But I have to know that I'm not going to get as much of that in a trial as I can in practice at this point.
Yep.
Yeah. I think with experience, your skills get more and more similar in a trial versus training. I don't think I see any difference in Dashed and Vivid's performances in training and trial anymore. Maybe a tiny bit less collection, but I think that's mostly handling. Like almost every time I can see my handling affecting that. I think really big, always got to sell FEO. If you have a run that you're willing to FEO and work commitment, work whatever skills in that trial atmosphere is a great idea. But for a lot of people, dogs have learned that their mechanics are different for FEO versus real runs. So doing these things in real runs too, especially if it's something I don't really care about. Most of my local trials, I am trying to just test skills. I'm pushing skills. I want to test my handling and push my dog's skills. Especially if we've already eaten or have a bar or something, I'm going to try to leave them in those weaves and run 60 feet away. I mean, I just found a video from a UKI trial in September where I left Dash in the weaves and I ran all the way, like it was weaves dog walk, and I ran all the way to the exit of the dog walk before she left the weaves. It was a local trial. I didn't need to do that. I could have done the course 30 feet behind if I stayed and stayed with the weaves, but I was testing that skill, seeing if it would hold up in a trial. And now I know it will, and I can leave her at tryouts.
Right.
Right. Yep.
Yep. Awesome. Well, I think that's a really good overview of commitment. And I know that those methods have made a significant difference for me in my own training. And it's good training.
Yeah.
I love it.
Ultimately comes down to good training principles. Which are really easy to overlook when we're focused on our agility.
Yeah, it's so easy to focus on the sequencing and forget about the skills.
Yep. I just want to get through it. But
that we're talking about me again.
Well, and I know that we have plans/hopes and dreams to have Peyton on somewhat regularly over the next year or so to talk with us. So we are excited to have had you for this first episode, and probably not the last you will be hearing from Peyton.
So that's all for today's episode. Don't forget to rate, share, and subscribe to our podcast so you can join us for our next episode. In the meantime, you can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube, or by visiting our website at www.caninehijinks.com.
Thanks for joining us. Make sure to go out and have some fun with your dogs. Talk to you next time.